WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with Harrison Gwinnett, who is the founder and CEO of VVSocial and Yunus Labs. He is also a serial entrepreneur and had his first eight-figure exit at the age of 22. Sorry for giving you that hard shout out now, mate.
And that's an intro, I like it.
Yeah, sure, you deserve it. And yeah, as you might already guess, today we will talk about onboarding people into Web3. So thanks, Harrison, for being here and starting out. I want you to, give a quick intro of what you're working on, what you're passionate about, and yeah, how does a day in Harrison's life look like?
Oh, very long, but no, pleasure, Kevin. Happy to be here and talk about Web3. I feel like people don't enough. Me personally, so what I've been working on and for the last, I'd say 2.5 years now, is VVSocial, now blended into Yunus Labs as the holdco. So quite simply, we are a whole ecosystem building within Web3, and it's centered around our avatar creation tech, which we actually started out as sort of a data ownership and management system, but decided to make it prettier. Because, I mean, you know, just looking at lines of data isn't the funnest thing for users. We switched into avatars and really just powered on these last couple of years, doing the R&D, all of the prototyping for it and building out this solution. And now just coming into 2023, yeah, this is our time for RevGen, all the front-facing stuff, the app this year, the collections, just absolutely everything is coming together now. And I would say that's my passion as well, if I'm honest. I mean, I love what I do, and I just wouldn't change it. And I don't see long hours as work. It's just I'm doing what I love every second of the day. Like, this is the passion as well, I admit. I'm a nerd and a workaholic.
Well, workaholic always has this negative nuance to it, right? But if you're entrepreneurial, if you have an entrepreneurial mindset, then how can it be bad, right? If you're not overdo it, right? I think we all had our phases where, yeah, you got to your, let's say, boundaries or something like that, right? So
yeah, you got to put in the time as well. I mean, it's there's always down days and days in between, but overall, there's a mission that everybody's heading for. So yeah, it's super fun, definitely a passion.
Yeah, I've seen some, sorry, that shifting towards, let's say, that topic now, but I've seen a post of yours, I think a few weeks ago, that warrior mindset, waking up, I think, doing push-ups or something like that.
Yeah, I've always believed in, like, you can create your own existence if you say it enough. And, like, I come into this year with this thing of, like, it, like the year of the warrior, I've sort of named it just because it's easier to say. And that kind of thing of like it's time to build. We've done a lot of years of planning, and now it's time for this front end and that real mindset shift to just go, no, put in the hours and provide. So yeah, I'm big on mindset as well. I mean, warrior mind is like one of my things right now.
That's cool. Yeah, basically how you think shapes the world that you see, right? So that's a big thing. Going back to VVSocial or Yunus Labs, some people might now think, well, don't we already have these kind of avatars? Would you like to elaborate a little bit on what's special about your project and why it's actually something that people should look out for?
Yeah, sure. So the avatar world is becoming more vast, and I'm kind of glad for it. And I think, first of all, there's certain niches for avatars, like Minecraft, Sandbox. Like, you have certain styles for certain areas that wouldn't require maybe the type of hyperrealism that we're trying to hit. But our avatars, we are aiming for the most realistic avatars that you can create yourself. And really it's to amplify and make these experiences in these virtual spaces engaging, immersive, and bring that immersive, enjoyable experience to people a lot more. And I'd say what is separating us right now in regards to the creation, there's one major method when it comes to realism, and people often use the term photorealistic. And photorealism is realism of a photo. And it's like reverse engineering that, okay, when you look at a photo, it's as real as the photo. And I think that's where we're facing problems with avatars, because it is essentially a 3D skull wrapped with an image. And with that, you start to come to constraints like, okay, if I want to change my hair one day, how does that look? What about my eyebrows, my eye color, my lip shapes? And especially when it comes to mocapping, you get these weird like pinch points in quality and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So we've built ours to be able to essentially recreate the human face instead of capture it and post it on a 3D image, 3D skull, sorry. And that's really allowing us to gain the like meta-human standard, if you like, of realism, but allowing the user to create themselves. Because I think there's amazing avatar tech companies, MetaHuman being one. I think it's Rebellium I've been sent, which is super cool as well. They're incredible. But being able to create yourself, I think, is so important for users to do. And making that easy as well. We're not all 3D artists here. And I mean, if you've seen me operate Unreal, I'm not either.
Okay, <so. laughs> all good. Yeah, but when you say recreating yourself, right? That's definitely a cool thing to do. When, you know, I'm not a 3D pro. I think you know that. But I had a lot of AR, VR projects in the past. And the only thing that I have seen is these, let's say, full body scans, if you actually want to recreate yourself, right? So how does it work in your case? I'm personally interested now.
So I'm going to say enough without revealing. It's one of them.
Oh, okay. It's secret. All good.
So essentially, we don't use LiDAR. And we essentially just use the as many data points as possible of the human face to then recreate. And there's a lot of tools out there now. I mean, facial recognition and detection, Apple's kit for mocap, all of these type of systems we're using as well because they work. But the actual avatar creation side, instead of a photo overlay, we actually the system individually creates all of the assets. So there's another way of doing avatars, which is from a library. You'd have maybe like 50 to 60 eyebrow shapes, for example. You choose the most relative one to you. It's kind of that concept, but just plumbed in with a lot of heavy data sets and AI underneath to make the realism peak. Because it is that thing, like even if you had a data set of 500 eyebrows, you're bound, like the billions of people in the world, you're never going to find the perfect one. So yeah, bit of power of AI tech and actually putting the framework together, large data sets in regards to the human face is allowing us to do it. But yeah, I can't say too much. I'm trying to paint a picture without painting too much of it.
you're fine, mate. Okay, that actually sounds very interesting. And yeah, as everyone is looking into AI, that's definitely, also a great way to actually gain awareness, right? Web3,
it's been a trend.
AI. Yeah.
It's been a crazy trend. We see it's quite recently actually the AI avatar type creator for profile pictures and images. And surprised on how many people paid like $50 to do that, but crazy how many people loved it. Really was. It's nice for me to see it as well. It's one of them. We know we're in the right place.
Love it. Okay. Yeah. And have those people that tried that, were those new users that you onboarded somehow, or I don't know, existing crypto Web3 people?
Yeah, so with our user base and sort of what we've generated up until now, we've been onboarding people very early, from day one really. As soon as I started sort of freshening out the initial concept, we began campaigns to generate data sets and really get valuable free feedback on how people would use the avatars. That was most important to me. So over the past sort of 2 years, I'd say we've had ongoing different campaigns go out to capture essentially users' demographic and use cases for the avatars. And what it's really helped do is shape what we need to do next. And it's kind of the lean startup method, the data first you build from. And it's really helped us initially focus on, okay, we have this avatar. What do people actually want to do with it? What do they think of first? We had a lot of feedback based around gaming and dropping into experiences and games that they already use of today. But you also had some odd ones in there, like meeting rooms became popular. It was like, Now we're remote working, it'd be super cool to have an avatar while I'm at home to replace me and mocap me. And you're like, okay, interesting. So yeah, it's really gave us a large data set. I'd say the people they're not really determined between Web 2 or Web 3. I'd say there's definitely a mix in there. I'm very about building front-end products that work in whatever domain we're in. And the Web3 world, blockchain, all being the underground plumbing of the product that makes it operate. So I haven't really, like in when we're generating these users from before, there's no mention of blockchain or crypto. And I think that's very valuable as well.
Love that. And I definitely think that's the right approach for the future, right? Because blockchain is a tool, it's a technology, just like anything else, like social media, the internet in general. And why promoting something like a website back then? Same issue, right? Everyone was crazy about websites. Wow, they are the first ever dog food online shop. I don't know, right? I wasn't there. But I just know it from stories. And yeah, it's the same with NFTs. So, and metaverse and everything. So I really like that approach. And I guess I will see it with the brands that do it the same, right?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see better brands now as well. I wasn't really of the age to understand it, but the dot-com boom and sort of everything that I've learned around that, and even sort of knowing the older generation that lived through that, feel like we're seeing them times now, right? Like we've had some market clear outs. We've had projects that near enough every project I've looked at is very innovative and has legs, definitely. But it's been due to sort of fine tune the best businesses and really, really build from that. And I think that's where we're going to get real world products from now. Feel like the people, it's that same like Twitter meme, if you like, if you're still here. And it's true. If you're still here, then you're here for a reason.
Yeah, probably. I would even say that's a big, big quality sign, right? It's not just for the vision that you have, but there need to be some fundamentals, right? Otherwise, your community would leave or become inactive. Investors would definitely not invest again in you if you have a token, NFT, or even from a VC point of view. And yeah, so I guess the bear market has its good sides as well. So
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, definitely.
One thing that I see here, and that goes actually back to the original topic that we had, is your community doesn't actively see Web3 as the major thing, right? But how do you overcome, let's say, that onboarding issue, right? Because people might need a wallet, depending on how you do everything, might need to, or might see some buzzwords, metaverse, that, what is this, right? That education aspect. How do you approach these things?
With our onboarding, all the platform is within a mobile app as well. So it's usually a lot more seamless to onboard. But I suppose the best reference is, imagine like Grand Theft Auto. You go into Grand Theft Auto, you create your avatar, you can operate in this virtual world, and you have your phone in the corner, and you can message your friends, you can port to different locations, you can see the map, but you can also trade stocks, and you have cash, and you have a balance. And strangely, none of that stuff is Web3. It's all Web2 based, very gamified GTO, but it's a great concept to use. But GTO focused on the experience and what the user would experience first, instead of pushing, it's just pushing the power of something before demonstrating what the power is. And I think with our onboarding, we have a very similar approach where everything isn't too dissimilar to what people are used to now. And what I mean by people is more the majority. We're still in this world where people are used to either mobile signups, logging with Googles, or just logging with plain email. And that's still the majority onboarding method. And we plan to keep that. And I think it's a slow rollout where we then start to integrate with wallet connections and stuff like that over time. But within signing up via email or mobile, you have the onboarding process for creating the avatar. Within the app, we have a very sociable feed, especially because you can create crazy content with your avatar. Like, it's kind of fun, that side of the business. That's the very Gen Z side of the business. But behind all of that avatar is, in a way, your GTA phone. Like, you go to your profile, you have, yes, your friends, your social life, your messaging systems there, but you also have your wallet, your balance, and all your stuff there. And it's presented in a way where it's definitely merging gamified with what we're used to in a social media sense, to just be appropriate to slowly adjust people, right? Like, it's people need to slowly get used to the metaverse. And I think everyone's been introduced very harshly to it. It's like, I remember like buying my first Oculus, and then all of a sudden it was like, wow, like straight away. But there's no like this general lead up to like, I don't know, let's do some AR on my phone first. Like, I don't know, there's no real nice seamless way to it. And I think that's super important to bring the masses to it. You need to have this very, very similar concept in regards to bringing the people to you and letting them experience something, and slowly begin to introduce these cool experiences, virtual experiences, being able to use these gems in your wallet, if you like, to be able to spend in app and do these things. So I think we're definitely merging the two worlds, but at the end of the day, people in Web3 will also sign up in a Web2 way. That's still not dissimilar to them. So it's an evolvement over time. And I think, I mean, you look 5 years in the future, it may just be wallet login. But for now, like, we need to bring people to it first. We really do.
That's a really interesting viewpoint. And even more interesting, and I'm sure you're aware of that, is that there are already a lot of, let's say, Web 2.5 solutions out there, right? Let's put it that way. People log in with Gmail and get a custodial wallet and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So I fully agree. That's definitely the way to go. Because I'm convinced that you definitely can teach all people, or not even 50% of all people on the planet, how to actually take care of a private key. Because look at passwords, right? We're still not even able to do that on scale. Yeah.
The thing is, I think when it is this thing to people in this space, and I mean, like I can pick up a ledger and just use a ledger now seamlessly, and it's like, okay, I'm used to that. Someone would look at me and go, you've got all of your like capital on that little thing. What if you lose that little thing? And it's like, okay, like we've got a way to go still. But yeah, I agree. Everything is very similar. I think the problem is like we need to show the front end benefits of why people should use it first. Then they invest. I mean, why are they going to invest in something that doesn't provide anything to them yet? And it's a catch 22, but we'll eventually overcome it. We're on route to overcoming it, I think.
Yeah, one can't build a perfect solution out of the box, right? It's always a process. Speaking of, let's say, masses and the metaverse, what you discussed before, what kind of role do you actually see for the so-called metaverse, right? When you talk about masses, why should the mass of people go into that direction or even care?
If I'm honest, I think over the next 10 years, not everyone will. Because it's like everything, right? Tech evolves with the generations. I mean, you fast forward 50 years, we'll be looking at another concept and going, really? But that's just the evolution of tech. But I think the concept of metaverse and getting people to the metaverse is definitely more of a gamified play for user onboarding. And it's sort of the first place you think about a open world that you can run around in and do what you want in. So there's definitely a play that does need to be picked up, and whether that's a Web2 brand coming in and taking over, or we see multiple that come out of Web3 is yet to be seen. I think that's going to lead the transition. I think there's going to be a lot of subs and secondaries off of that, like meeting room environments for remote brands. I mean, I think about it now, we have 3 people in this country and we span to about 8 countries so far, and we all just do remote calls. So when you create them quite immersive experiences and solutions that you don't usually think of as being beneficial, I think you'll start seeing the wider population use it. But at the same time, I don't think everyone should. And it's all about that fair choice. There's definitely this bull run to make everything a metaverse and be a Ready Player One, if you like. But at the same time, it's another world, and we have the real world, we have the digital world, and there's always a mix of both and a consideration for both. And along with that, it's down to brands to adapt to that. I mean, yeah, okay, you can be a full-blown metaverse brand, and that's what you do. But there still needs to be like this seamless identity point to bring you into metaverse, out of metaverse, Web2, gaming, console, AR, real world, digital world, medical data. Like, it's endless. You still need this like hub, and the hub is still like your email. And I think that's the evolvement. It's like, strip away the email. And I am talking very front end, but like, take away the email and make that a wallet. And then all of a sudden it's all yours and the power comes. And yeah, it's hard to see every single person in a metaverse. Definitely is, because you have to then create value for every single one of them. But yeah, jobs, meeting rooms, I can see it all coming into play. But I think it's going to be one of those, it's just going to be a very, very big industry. It's like gaming. Gaming's absolutely enormous, and it could be a similar market size and probably a lot more. But the metaverse is, again, it's like the secondary reason to really the reasons behind Bitcoin, blockchains, and why it's there. It's all about fair data distribution, control, ownership, and not really having everything held centrally and controlled. So I think it's, yeah, Metaverse is, it feels like it's its own category at the moment, right? I mean, it'll probably evolve into more, but it's hard to foresee where it is going to roll.
Yeah, really. It's definitely difficult because everyone defines it differently. Many people claim it's not there yet. It depends, right? I even have heard from someone who really, really is super specialized on that topic, defining the metaverse that it doesn't even need to be 3D. It can be 2D, right? And so, well, that makes it then really difficult, right, to actually define what is it and why is that somewhat of, let's say, it's not a new concept, right, but all that hype, quote marks, just happened the last few years with Meta, Facebook, and so on, right?
Yeah. I prefer the word like virtual experiences or environments. And it's even been very certain with a couple of brands that we've been working with, quite large brands in Web 2. The metaverse word is scary to them. They're like, no, like, that's crypto, that's everything scary, no way. And again, it goes back to that same point, like, people need to slowly adjust to this. And it's always that thing, right? Like, you say slowly, but then all of a sudden it's 5 years later and everyone's using it. Like, it just feels slow in the moment. But yeah, I'm super keen to see where it goes. Really am.
Yeah, good things take time, right? Yeah, you talked about gaming and industries. So what I usually like to ask is, what kind of use cases, besides gaming, obviously, do you see for that space, however you define metaverse?
The best kind of wordings that I've come up with for us is that a metaverse is a country. It's a very interesting concept. And it really opens your mind to how much can be done. And it's also, what is it? So, I mean, we're building these virtual worlds that have similar experiences to the real world, but are probably over-dramatized or can scale more. Like, there's benefits to them. I'm not discrediting them. But you're building what's in the real world online. So technically everything in this world can be put in the virtual world. And then again, we've got, I mean, pound sterling here, that's our currency. Yes, there's multiple currencies if you travel to a different world. So then when you're online and you're using that token in Decentraland, and then you go to this metaverse and use a different token, you're in a different country. And it's that's, I'm sort of saying that because I don't think there's any limit on what you can create and what you can do. Because, I mean, just in this space, we've spoke about metaverse as a game in play. We spoke about brands coming in. Retail is a massive one that's coming up right now, being able to make, like, shoppable, immersible experiences. We spoke about meeting rooms. So you think about anything, cars, racing, free play mode, just driving around. Music, concerts. I see it as a country. Like, you can build everything in the virtual world, amplify it, but it's all in the real world still. Houses, apartments. It's endless.
Well, you said a couple of interesting things here, and I'm curious on your opinion on what statement I will just throw now at you. I like to think of it as, or my personal humble opinion, right? I don't think that real world experiences will actually shift too much at all into the metaverse because people actually tend to, let's say, skip social media now and all that thing, right? They want to go back. But at the same time, I think everything that we do digitally already, like this podcast now, remote working, concerts, which for me is the, let's say, the the same thing would be for me watching YouTube videos, maybe like one of those concert videos.
Yeah.
I rather like to think of that. Like, I guess these kind of platforms are more endangered than actually the real world experiences, but I might be wrong. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I get that. And I think the main, like, I kind of agree, like, not everything needs to be created. It can, though. It doesn't need to be. But it's certain things that you wouldn't be able to be there and experience it in real life, but you can in a digital realm. That's why it's been kind of fascinating to see where you can go. Concerts is one. You, like, viewing these global artists, I get the YouTube concerts as well, because I'm very much like that. But if you want that immersive, like, full-on experience, I'm there, I'm, like, living it as best I can be, you would then go VR. I mean, you can push all the way to, like, sensory kits and all sorts of crap, but I don't think we're there yet. And it's the same with retail and events. It's like, I can't go to the shop. So, like, you may start seeing, like, Shopify as 3D stores, and you're just like, okay, that's different. So I think you're right. Like, not everything will be there, but the capabilities of what can be there is the thing that there's no cap on. Whether it works or not, again, it's a different story. Like,
yeah, it's just brainstorming, right? What we do now, just throwing assumptions into the void. but yeah, you said again a couple of interesting things, right? Because that thought that I just had before originally came from shopping, you know, in the metaverse. Because I thought, well, that's actually cool, right? You can look at these things and everything. You go through the aisle. But then I thought, well, it has only advantages if you're actually the person that would do online shopping in this case, right? Or if it's far away, but then you would do online shopping as well, which means this would be really advantage again, right? So, but that's just, you know, my little humble assumption. So I have no idea.
No, I agree with it as well. And I think then it comes back to the value add. It's like, if you are going to put something in a metaverse, a virtual experience, and utilize all this tech, why are you doing it? Shopping, so a perfect value add that I can add in here, it's like something that we've been really focused on is providing brands with people's avatars at they're accurate as you are in real life. You can adjust all body measurements. You can do body scans as well if you wanted to get, like, finite measurements as well. So you could go to an online Shopify store clothing brand, walk around, try it on your avatar, actually see the correct fit and how it fits on your body and how it looks, which will ultimately reduce return rates and people going, I don't want this item anymore. Benefits the brand, benefits all the postal services, benefits, like, the economy of it all as well, the environment, the whole thing. So it's all about the value add. And I think this is where a lot of people are missing out, or not quite understanding. The metaverse and Web3 isn't something just to build out and go, there you go, it's done. And I don't think it should be looked at as that's just that thing. Like, what we're building here needs to work everywhere and still be a product or service somewhere and still benefit someone somewhere and still improve life somewhere. It can't just be pick this up, put that there. Oh, it's working. I don't know why, though. But there always needs to be some sort of value add to, like, why would you? It's purely that thing. Like, I'd rather go on holiday and go and see the pyramids, or go to Peru, or go in nature somewhere and go to a beach. But if I can't, and I need 5-10 minutes, and I physically can't make that happen right now, and I can get near enough to it and sort of just take a 10-minute bliss by a beach and just in my little VR headset with some music and just have that 10-minute break, that's a value add. So it is the value in between, definitely. Because I hate this run for the metaverse. I don't think everyone's sprinting for this metaverse to go, we are the metaverse that's going to work. And it's like, where's the value add?
Fully agree. And you just remembered me of these 5D cinemas, you know, where you suddenly get like a water drop into your face and these things.
They're super cool experiences. I love them cinemas. You just brought me back to like my childhood.
Just talking about beaches, right? That would be like the ultimate version where you actually have that, you know, sea salt smell in your nose and these kind of things, right? That would be crazy for sure. Fully agree. As always, value, use case. I think people in Web3, Metaverse and so on just tend to forget it sometimes.
It's the main problem in people building in it, I think.
Yeah.
Forgetting about like the real world value of all of it. The whole thing.
For sure. Yeah. Anything you would like to drop, because I heard something.
I just wanna ask you one thing in regards to this value side. So as a developer, you must have just seen so many different realms of projects as well. Not even just NFTs, metaverse, blockchain builds, identity pushes, data search, even like the odd, like I've seen a lot of NFT tools recently and trading tools as well. So seeing all of them come in, when they come in, can you see the whole value add and what the business is actually doing and how they're producing? And what I mean by that is something that is becoming more apparent is that let's just take any NFT project and just go NFT project. They only make money by selling NFTs, activating community, doing merch, and they may well be just a creative project. There's no downer on it. But do you often like see projects with that ROI after NFTs come through? Or like a token launch, for example. You do a token launch, it's integrated somewhere, or you can trade it, you can do swaps with it, you pump and dump it, whatever you do with it. What percentage is like they really have real value adds and what doesn't?
You mean from compared to all projects?
And I'm asking you this as well, because like there's bound to be many projects you've turned down as well, probably for this reason. But I'm curious to see like throughout the bull market, how many people really were just trying to just go, we'll go and do that and work out how to build a product afterwards. Like that, it's really curious. I'm really curious about it.
I see where you're coming. Like people are just wanting to launch and then doing that soft rug or going away and these kind of things.
Yeah, soft rug, or just like it might not even come across that. Like I think the majority of people are genuine as well, but they haven't looked at it like financing for a project to build ROI and build a business model. And I've always been curious. I've seen so many projects really do well on mints as well. Tokens do really well, but they've never actually thought about the brand impact and the ROI outside of Web3. I think that's the thing. The brand's thinking outside of Web3. Like, I'm curious, like how many think outside of Web3?
Well, it depends on when you ask this question, right? 1-2 years ago, I would even say like 99% didn't think outside of Web3.
Mm.
Because to be fair, it also is really difficult to get Web2 people actually into it, recognizing them, showing them the advantages, even especially considering that now we have way better tools than back then.
That's true, yeah.
So that's the only thing, but it's still, let's say, right now in the bear market, we actually, for sure, still a lot of projects that you know think like 21, 20, and so on. But I would say the ratio got much, much better, right? Most people, especially larger companies, don't just try to drop an NFT collection maybe build something on that after that, but actually go from a use case perspective on it. And then if it makes sense, add blockchain, add NFTs, and which automatically results in having some real world value, having a use case, utility, and all these kind of things.
Yeah, no, so. I get that. Yeah, no, I'm curious because, like, I mean, I've only seen the bull and the bear market from my perspective, but seeing it from a dev's perspective, it must have been just, like, crazy. Because, like, I understand it as well. I really do. Jump on the bandwagon when it's going well. Everyone does. I mean, it's just how it is. But, yeah, it's nice to see because we've been talking a lot about it. Like, bear markets are a really good thing sometimes because you get the quality through and you get that longevity of work as well. And you just get that longevity of just building really good stuff as well. And that's why I wanted to know, really. Like, I just think everyone sort of left is starting to build more meaningfully, definitely.
Fully agree. And what I saw is it's more about the experience of the founders, right? In bull markets, everyone thinks they can create an NFT collection. Some student that has never, you know, launched anything, never built anything, and thinks, well, I just need the smart contract. Well, what about the rest, you know? It starts with these kind of things. And then it ends with people that maybe are successful, but didn't think about what now, right? So that's, I would say it's more about the experience of the founders. And yeah, luckily in bear markets, people like you, for example, come in or are already in the market and get ready. And yeah, so basically that's the view that I got.
Yeah, no, cool to know, really good to know.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Hey, Harrison, do you maybe have 3 key takeaways that you want people to remember from this cool session? Difficult.
Be the tortoise, not the hare, to the metaverse. Slowly on board is the way, I'd say. Think product and service first and how to actually benefit someone. That's what business is about, problem, solution, and solving it. And ultimately, solving a problem in someone's daily life, that's what it's about. And I'd say, if you haven't already, if you're wanting to be in Web3 and dive in and begin a project, I would actually say now is probably the best time to find the best people, I'd say. I've seen a lot of people sort of exit the space and a couple of people with really good projects and backing actually as well. And they've gone, oh, no, we'll wait. And I think it's the opposite. I think if anyone's looking to come in right now, it's probably one of the best times to find the best people. It really is.
Fully agree. Especially with all these unfortunate tech layoffs and everything. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hey. Awesome, mate. It was great talking with you again. And yeah, thank you everyone for watching and thank you for taking the time out of your really busy schedule. No, that wasn't Kevin. Like...
Yeah, no, pleasure. Cheers, Kevin. We'll see you soon.
See ya.
Wave Act, the Web3 software company that understands what you want.